You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 100 by Rudolf Steiner, a book entitled True Knowledge of the Christ, containing two cycles of lectures from 1907. This is the 23rd section of the book, so-called. It is the last lecture in the Gospel of John cycle and the end of the book, Lecture 8, translated by Anna Moyes, given in Basel on the 25th of November, 1907. The writer of the Gospel of John said in conclusion that the Christ also did many other things which are not included in the book. Quote, Jesus also did many other things. Indeed, if they were all written down, I expect that the world itself would not contain the books being written. Close quote from John chapter 21, verse 25. In the same way, we have to say that even quite a long series of lectures would not be enough to explain everything written in the Gospel. Today we'll take a closer look at the two concepts, Father and capital I. They will provide an explanation for the human evolution which has been discussed in the preceding lectures. Humanity started out from an I awareness that was very different from the one we know. Adam, in quotes, should not be taken to be a single individual, but an I awareness spanning several generations. The one who starts such a generation is the Father, in quotes. In Old Testament Judaism, Abraham was indeed felt to be the Father, and every Jew in those times said to himself, quote, I am not an independent I, but one I flows down from Abraham and branches out into all members of the tribe, including me. Close quote. If you have a great tree, the vital sap flows from the root to every individual branch and twig, and so the vital sap of Abraham, the I, which the Jewish peoples have in common, flows through the whole Jewish nation. When a Jew spoke the name of the Father in Old Testament times, he would be pointing to the whole bloodline. He would call this I awareness, which encompassed all generations, quote, the divine consciousness, close quote. Addressing the I as God, he would call it Yahweh. When the name Yahweh was heard, the people were reminded that a common I flows through the whole nation that began with Abraham, the father of the tribe. Mixed blood meant that this relationship changed in time. Awareness of the I am has been individualized, and the Christ is the power appointed to make humanity aware of this change. For the human beings of earlier times, the I am meant something which flowed on through generations. To people of later times, it is something which flows through their own inner body. The former meant the God who flowed through the whole community as the divine awareness of I nature. The others are sentient of a spark in them, a drop of the divine substance. Think of a power sent to earth which makes humanity very much aware of this I am, can live in every individual human being. A power which makes it clear that God has put a drop of his substance into every human being. This power would say, quote, this I am is something which is there in every one of you. It is one particle of the one divine power. The individual I am, of which you are sentient, is one with the Father's I Am. If you have gained awareness of this fact, you are able to say, quote, I and the Father are one, close quote. Look up all the way to Adam. You see I awareness flow through generations for centuries and millennia. But there is an even higher awareness, one given to man in the human quality at his very source and origin. It is the awareness of a humanity that encompasses not individual generations, but the whole of humanity. Then came the awareness which human beings individualized in the I Am. Thus the Christ was able to say, quote, before there was Abraham, there was the I Am, close quote. To elucidate the concept of the I Am still further, let us go to the golden legend, which is known in all Christian schools. There it says, quote, when Seth, given by Jehovah in place of Abel, came to the gates of paradise one day, the cherub with the flaming sword admitted him to the place from where human beings had once been driven out. Seth saw two intertwined trees, the tree of life and the tree of knowledge. And the cherub indicated that he should take three seeds from the two intertwined trees. Seth put these three seeds into the mouth of his father Adam when he had died. A threefold tree grew from the grave, and some would see it in fiery letters making up the words, subquote, I am he who was, who is, and who shall be, close subquote, continue quote. The wood from this tree, which had grown from Adam's grave, was put to many uses. The magic rod Moses used to perform his miracles was made of it. The wood was also used in the gates to Solomon's temple. The bridge which Jesus crossed when he was taken to his death was also made of it. And finally, the cross on which he was crucified on Golgotha. Close quote. The explanation of the legend given in the occult schools was this. You see two trees in the human being, the tree of red blood and the tree of blue-red blood. The red blood tree reflects knowledge and insight. The blue-red blood tree, life. The two trees were separated from one another, according to the most ancient teaching. Quote, there was a time when no red blood did as yet develop in man. It was only when the I came down into the human body that the red blood developed. The life reflected in the blue-red blood had been there for a long time. It developed through higher development of the juices of life. And from the Christian point of view, the time when it had been given to human beings was the time of paradise, when the first dawning of the I settled in the human soul, when the Godhead came down, and human beings only endowed with a group soul, nevertheless had in this the first beginnings of the individual I. Close quote. According to the paradise myth, quote, having been given the red blood, human beings gained insight, learned to look up. Their eyes were opened, and they came to know the difference between man and woman. Close quote. This insight had its price, however. Awareness of I nature can only arise if the blood dies. Life is continually used up and renewed in the human body. The blue blood has done what it was made for when it is used up, and the annihilation of the blue blood leads to awareness of I nature. Powers are going to develop in the human soul that will enable human beings to master and unite the two trees. Human beings are sentient of I nature only because they are all the time bearing murder, the dying process, in them. In the state in which they came to earth, human beings are dependent on plants, for it is only they which provide the conditions for life. Just consider, for instance, that people are all the time inhaling air containing oxygen and exhaling used-up air that contains carbon dioxide. They use up the oxygen, converting it to carbon dioxide. We are unable to live without oxygen, and we get this only from plants. They change the carbon dioxide produced by human beings back into oxygen, and thus make the air breathable again. The plant keeps back the carbon, which it has split off from the carbon dioxide, giving it back to human beings thousands of years later in the form of coal. The earth is a single organism, and if just one part of it were missing, life as it now exists would be impossible. We may consider plant, animal, and human being as one system, and indeed, if you take away the plant, life will no longer be possible for the other two. This will change in a far distant future. People in general do not yet know about this, but the seer can perceive the time when the stream of carbon dioxide will no longer be transformed with the help of plants, but by human beings themselves producing useful oxygen. That is the great future ideal of the occult schools, that human beings will consciously achieve within themselves what plants are doing for them today, making a function their own which is today performed by plants. Organs will develop in them that will permit them to convert carbon dioxide themselves. The initiate sees how at a future time the two trees, the carbon dioxide and the oxygen tree, will merge their crowns into one. Then the principle of which it is said, quote, I am the one who was, the one who is, and the one who will be, close quote, will live in every human being as something that is eternal. The I did live in Adam, but it had to be fructified first. In the beginning, the tree of life had to be made into the tree of death. It could not be put together with the tree of knowledge, and so the two trees were separate from one another, with the plant put between them. Awareness of eternity had to be gained first. Christ Jesus bore this within him and transplanted it to the earth. The three seeds are the three divine principles, manas, buddhi, and atman. The eternal part of them all was placed in Adam's grave. From that grave, awareness of eternity was proclaimed. From that grave grew the tree which showed writing in fire, quote, I am the one who was, the one who is, and the one who shall be, close quote. The Christ taught human beings to ignite this, quote, I am an individual human being, close quote, in human nature, when he said, quote, seek to lean more and more on the spirit of the I am, and you will have the element that lets you be in communion with me. It is only through this I am that you get to the divine Father, for the Father and I are one, close quote. Only one seer was able to grasp this, and that was the writer of the Gospel of John. He did not want to record just historical facts, but something which one perceives on looking into the spiritual world. To know what was happening in the spiritual world, a seer who was a contemporary of the Christ had to enter into the sleep state. This is hinted at in chapter 3. Nicodemus, a leader among the Jews, came to the Christ at night. He came to him because he wanted to be a seer. He had achieved the state where he could be a seer, and he, quote, came at night, close quote, because his daytime consciousness has been extinguished. In the fifth verse of the chapter, we also find the important teaching that the human being can be born, quote, out of the spirit, close quote. The Christ said, John chapter 14, verse 6, quote, I am the way, the truth, and the life, close quote. Where is the way which takes us to the highest Godhead through the Christ? The I am is working on the astral body, creating the spirit self. It is working on the physical body, creating the spirit self. creating the spiritual human being. When the eye of man works on the human being, the spirit self is worked out, and the life spirit then arises. That is how the human being finds the true life. For the I am is working through the lower bodies, letting the true life arise in them. We can represent it like this. And there's a diagram. The I am shows the direction which human beings must take to get spirit self, life spirit, and spiritual human being to unfold. Theosophical teachings may also be found in the Gospel of John. The fact that an individual I lives in every human being, that there is a spark of divine substance in this I, and that this spark must become the God in us, is touched on by the writer of the Gospel, chapter 9. Most translations of the Bible give the answer that the Christ gave when asked who had sinned, the man born blind, or his parents, as, quote, "Neither has this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him," close quote. But is it reasonable for a Christian to say that God lets someone be born blind in order to reveal his glory in him? The notion of a God who is capable of such a conclusion is impossible. The passage reads much more simply and clearly if we base it on the theosophical view. The Christ's answer was, quote, "Neither he nor his parents have sinned. He fulfills his karma so that the divine spark in him may be visible, so that the deeds of God within him may be outwardly apparent," close quote. The Christ's answer, John chapter 9, verse 3, should be translated as, quote, "He was born blind, so that the deeds of the God in him shall be visible in the body," close quote. Every human being goes through repeated lives on earth. We see someone who was born blind. He does not have to have sinned in this life, but may have brought the sin that has led to this birth with him from an earlier life. It is karma, as taught in Theosophy, active throughout incarnations, which is described in this event. It is clear that with this the Christ would be in conflict with the accepted Jewish view, and this also explains the difficulties which he then had with the Jews, John chapter 9, verse 22. Another passage in the Gospel also relates to the karma concept. A strange passage in chapter 8 says that when the Pharisees questioned Jesus on his views concerning adultery, he bent down, verses 6 and 8, not saying a word, and wrote with his finger in the earth. The earth, as we have seen, is his own body. He did not condemn the woman taken in adultery, but inscribed her action in his own organism. He was indicating that just as a seed put in the earth germinates and bears fruit of its kind, so will everything a human being does germinate in a later life on earth and bear fruit of its kind, and that no power on earth can remove the consequences of an action. Theologians believe in expiation, believe that the Christ died for us, and believe that they must not accept the karma concept because it goes against the view that the Christ took on all the sins of the world with his death. This disharmony between theosophical and theological views does, however, resolve in harmony if seen in the right way. The karma concept is the same for life as the accounts ledger is for the merchant. According to karmic law, we have to assume that anything we have caused in earlier lives will have its effect on us in the present life, and that anything we do now will have its reflection in later lives. We thus have a complete balance sheet in life. Good deeds are shown on one page, bad ones on the other. If someone thinks that it is not possible to act freely under the rule of karmic law, every way of doing things being a consequence of earlier actions, he'd be like the merchant, saying that having drawn the balance, I must not do any more business, otherwise the balance sheet would be incorrect. That is not the right way of thinking in business, and the conclusion drawn above about karmic law is equally incorrect. Rightly understood, the karma concept does not have any fatalism to it. Free will and karma can be reconciled most beautifully, and, rightly understood, karma is never something that cannot be changed. And if someone were not prepared to assist another person in his misfortune, saying that he must not intervene in his karma, that would be just as wrong as refusing financial help to a merchant who was facing bankruptcy. The merchant would enter that financial help as a debit in his ledgers, which he will have to repay, whilst the individual who has helped out would enter it as a loan in his books. In the same way, every good deed is like an entry on the credit side of the balance sheet, and a debit in the records of the individual given that help. Karmic law, therefore, does not ignore any help given, and it seems perfectly appropriate to relieve the karma of one's neighbor with acts of mutual assistance. People can do something good for a single individual, but there are also actions that benefit many people, that is, ease their karma, and these are recorded in the ledgers of many people. And an act as mighty as the one performed by the Christ is recorded in the karma of all human beings, for it eases the karma of all the people who inwardly respond to it. We see, therefore, that the karmic law is almost mentioned in the Gospel of John, and that its existence does not in any way limit freedom of action. Christ Jesus entered into a relationship with the whole of humanity in an act of self-sacrifice. According to karmic law, every act is recorded in life's register of debts. It is then connected with the body of the Christ, with the earth. This is why he did not judge the adulterous woman on the spot, but inscribed her action in his own body. He receives into his own body everything that can happen between one individual and another, for karma must always come to fruition in the earthly world. The story makes us deeply aware that with his deed the Christ has made himself part of the whole karmic evolution of all humanity. He is leading the future evolution of humanity. Recalling again the five periods of civilization, Indian, Persian, Egyptian, Greco-Roman, and European, we see that the basis for the Christ power that will bear fruit for the whole of humanity was established during the third period. The foundation then laid within human evolution will only emerge into life in the sixth period. Then the spirit self, which has evolved from the spiritual soul, will connect with the life spirit. From the third to the fourth period, the Christ power shone out prophetically. In the sixth period, the great marriage of humanity will be celebrated as the spirit self unites with the life spirit. Then humanity will come together in the great brotherhood, with I joining I, brother joining brother, in that brotherhood forecast in the wedding at Cana in Galilee, which was not only an historical event, but also shows, symbolically, how the sons of man will, in the sixth period of civilization, come together in one great brotherhood that encompasses the whole of humanity. Three periods have to pass from the third period before this will come to pass, the third, fourth, and fifth. In esoteric teaching, a period is called a day, which is why chapter 2 begins with the words, quote, on the third day, a wedding took place in Cana in Galilee, close quote. The words indicate that the story of the wedding which follows refers to something that will happen in the future. The mother of Jesus, the spiritual soul, was present at the wedding. The Christ said to her, quote, "This is between me and you, woman. My hour has still not come." Close quote. This clearly shows that reference is made to something at the wedding in Cana that is due to happen only in the future. What did Jesus do, his hour not yet having come? He transformed the water into wine. One keeps coming across the explanation that this was to indicate that new fire, new vital energy was to be given to a Jewish nation that had fallen into decadence, changing insipid, in quotes, water into fiery wine. One might imagine that wine drinkers have thought this up as a justification for what they are doing. But in grasping the true significance of this act, we gain deep insight into the great evolution of the world. Alcohol has not always been connected with humanity. Everything spiritual that evolves has its corresponding reflection in matter. And conversely, all forms of matter also have their counterpart in the sphere of the spirit. Wine, alcohol, only made its appearance at a particular time in world and human history. It will disappear again in due course. Here we see the profound truth of occult investigation. Alcohol was the bridge from the generic or group I to the independent individual I. Human beings would never have made the transition from group to individual I without the material effect of alcohol. This generated the individual, personal, conscious awareness of human beings. Once humanity has reached this goal, it will no longer need alcohol, and this will disappear from the physical world. You see, everything that happens has its significance in the wise guidance of human evolution. Because of this, we should not say anything against anyone who takes alcohol, though, on the other hand, human beings who have rushed ahead of the rest of humanity and taken their inner development to a point where they no longer need alcohol should also avoid it. The Christ has come to give humanity powers so that the highest level of I awareness can be reached in the sixth period. He wants to prepare human beings for the time, quote, still to come, close quote. If he had let the water be the offering, humanity would never have got as far as having an individual I. Transforming the water means raising human beings to the level of being individuals. Humanity had reached a point in its evolution where it needed the wine. This is why the Christ changed the water into wine. Once the hour has come when humanity no longer needs wine, the Christ will change the wine into water again. How could the Christ develop the power needed to change water into wine? Because the earth itself is his body. He was able to make the earth's powers active in himself. In the earth, water changes into wine as it flows through the grapevine. As a person, the Christ was also able to do the process that happens in the earth, for all the powers and forces of the earth must also be present in him, as soon as the earth comes to be his body, ensouled by his astral body. What does the earth do with its powers? If we put seed in the ground, it will germinate and bear fruit. It multiplies, one becoming many. In the same way, reproduction makes one animal into many. The same power of increase, of multiplication, is also active in the Christ, as indicated in the feeding of the 5,000. The Christ has the power of multiplication of seeds that is inherent in the earth. If we keep hold of the idea, quote, "the body of the Christ is the earth with its powers," close quote, and apply it to the story in the Gospel of John many of the details begin to make sense. What, in fact, are Gospels? In the Gospel of John, we have to see a presentation of the initiation principles that existed throughout antiquity. The things an initiand did outwardly did not set the standard for the school to which he belonged. It was the experiences he went through in one level after the other, from one degree of initiation to the next, that set the standard. Academics are most surprised to discover elements similar to those of the evolutional history of Christ Jesus in that of the Buddha. The explanation is that the authors of such biographies recorded not the circumstances of external life, but those of the inner life, the spiritual facts. These are the same for all true initiates, for they have all taken the same course and gone through the same experiences. The things initiates had to live through in the process of initiation were laid down in the rules for initiation, and all initiates of the same degree had to go through the same experiences. The biographers were, therefore, only writing a biography of the different stages of initiation. The Gospels are nothing but ancient initiation rules that go to different depths. A process that in earlier times had gone on at a reduced level of consciousness was gone through openly on Golgotha. Death until then overcome in the ether body during initiation was now overcome in the physical body. The event on Golgotha was the initiation of an initiate of the highest degree who had not been initiated by someone else. The writer of the Gospel of John was therefore only able to describe the life of the Christ in the way given in the initiation codex. Living through the Gospel of John, you will awaken the power of vision in you. It is a seer's book, written to train visionary powers. Living through it sentence by sentence, the great, tremendous result you get is that you come spiritually face to face with the Christ. It is not made easy for human beings to gain conviction. They have to work their way through to the goal where insight arises that the Christ is a reality. The Gospel of John is the way that takes us to the Christ. The writer wanted to give everyone opportunity to understand him. If you develop the spirit self from the astral body within you, the wisdom will come to you in the spirit that will help you understand what the Christ is. The Christ himself gave an indication of this. He is hanging on the cross. His mother and his initiate disciple, whom he loves, are standing beside it. The disciple is to give to humanity the wisdom, the insight into the significance of the Christ. Attention is therefore drawn to the mother Sophia with the words, quote, "Here is our mother, she must be loved," close quote. The spiritualized mother of Jesus is the Gospel itself. She is the wisdom that takes human beings to their most sublime insights. The disciple has given us Mother Sophia, that is, he has written the Gospel for us, and for those who explore it, this Gospel holds the possibility to get to know Christianity, the origin and goal of this great movement. The Gospel of John has in it the wisdom of, quote, "God in man," close quote, theosophy. And the more human beings devote themselves to the study of this document, the more wisdom and enlightenment will come to them from its pages. And that is the end of the last section here, 23, the end of Lecture 8, the end of this cycle, and the end of the book, True Knowledge of the Christ by Rudolf Steiner.